welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy.
It's Pirates are back in front.
It's what? I'm sorry?
The Pirates are back into the bumpers.
Oh, no.
Yes, I've decided that that Pirates best suit the theme that I have in my head for this evening.
Aha, okay.
So, we'll get to that in a minute. How are you?
I am doing well. It is a partly cloudy, partly sunny evening here in Northern California. I'm standing out here in my front yard watching the dog run around and thinking, you know, this ain't bad.
Yeah. The puppy is at my feet.
Uh-huh.
Not been feeling well the last couple of days.
Uh-oh.
Something running through him.
Yeah. Probably that swine flu stuff.
Yeah. Given the fact that he'll eat damn near anything, I'm afraid that if there was a pig around, he'd eat that too.
So yeah, probably.
I wouldn't be surprised. We've had actually a couple of nice days here. It's been nice. Had a house all open, let it get all flushed out, you know, get all the stale air out.
You get a chance to go golfing?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm thinking that I'm going to say the hell with everything and go tomorrow and play 9 holes just
there
to see if the body still functions.
Hey, there you go. You got to check out the equipment every once in a while.
Yeah, so I think what I'll do is I won't walk the course. It's been a long winter.
Yeah.
So I won't walk the course. I'll go to a slightly longer course, you know, take a cart, go 9 holes. It won't take me long.
Mm-hmm.
9 holes on a cart should take me just about an hour.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Unless there's people out there, then it might actually slow me down a little bit. But, but of course, you know, I probably won't be playing that well, so it'll probably maybe take me an hour and 10 minutes.
Ah, okay.
Just a minute per hole chasing down things. Anyways, that's what I'm kind of looking forward to, maybe tomorrow being able to do that.
That'd be so cool.
Let's talk about Pirates. Now, when we first put the Pirate Bumper music on, we were talking about both the Pirates outside of Somalia and the taking of the different cargo ships and such.
Mm-hmm.
We were also talking about the Pirates in Congress and how they were doing pretty much exactly the same thing.
Yes.
But today, what's got me thinking about Pirates today, CJ has to do a report, and it's been really driving her crazy in school. And the report is she has to do a literary analysis on a book they read in class.
Hmm.
Now, I have a particular point of view about literary analysis. First of all, I think it's pretty much bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but I can't tell her that I think it's bullshit, because, you know, she actually has to do something about it.
That's right.
So, given the fact that I can't do that, I actually had to talk to her a little bit about what it is that she was trying to deal with. And, of course, she needs to come up with a thesis, her idea of what the point was for this book. And it was a story about a kid going to a new high school. What the whole point of, I think, the story, and it's something that we as adults may or may not remember, but I'm certain it happened in every single one of our lives in high school, was the idea that when you have a group, the group has a tendency to enforce a certain amount of conformity with that group.
Absolutely.
And when you
why they're
are
a group.
New, I'm sorry?
It's why they're a group.
It's why they're a group. They
yeah.
have some specific thing that they're looking at. Now, if you know, you're a teenager trying to break into a new school, obviously there's either got to be a hook or you're going to have a hard time. Everyone is aware of that. But even, you know, the social outcasts, and I was one for a while in high school, but it wasn't even necessarily my situation, but it happened enough that I think anybody that paid any attention saw it happen a fair amount in, you know, their high school years, their growing up years. But of course it doesn't end in high school. College has lots of conformity. When I went to the University of Illinois at Chicago, there's a place on campus called the Union. No, it's not the Union. Center. What was it called?
Yeah.
Anyways, what it was it was a large sitting area with kind of like bleachers and 80 or 100, 150 tables. And they're big tables, like 10 people to the table and booths. And in the back of it, they had all kinds of little restaurant-type things. You could get all kinds of different food.
Student union,
and
sure.
You figure at a college, there's a whole lot of mixing of different people going on. No. The black students would be in their corner. The Asian students would be in their corner. The Hispanics would be in their corner. The whites would be kind of spread out all over, but they would be in one section with the goths would be over in one section. You know, and you know the bangers would be on another section. People segregated themselves extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, each of those groups had their rules, and trying to break into them was considerably difficult if you did not conform.
Yes.
The point that I tried to make to CJ today was I found that entire situation to be ridiculous.
Yes.
Especially at the high school level. It was absolutely driving me crazy because what do high school students do? What is the defining characteristics of high school students?
They're rebels.
They're rebels. They're trying not to be conformists.
Yes.
So it's really odd for me to have a whole bunch of people saying, we're not going to be conformists, and you better damn well agree with us.
Yes.
When we get out of high school or even when we get into college, there's a whole nother type of conformity that exists out there. And, of course, in the political sphere, we have a whole lot of conformity going on.
Oh, boy. Yes.
So it is this general idea. Now, can we suggest that the Democrats impose a significant amount of conformity upon their participants in their party?
Absolutely.
Or not. Think about all the different groups within the Democratic Party that set aside what would probably be some natural disputes in order to improve their political power.
I don't know that's going to be a defining kind of a thing.
Maybe not defining, but let me give you an example of two groups that work very, very well together in the Democratic Party who would have, by most appearances, some opposition in their natural conforming ways.
Okay.
Academicians, teachers, professors, college teachers, and union organizers.
Ooh, you're going to have to flesh that out because it seems to me like they have a whole lot more in common than they do differentials.
Well, I agree. They have a lot in common. But maybe the things they don't have in common are as important.
Okay.
They're important, at least from my point of view. Let's look at it this way. Union organizers, they want to get into a corporation, an organization, and they want to get the union, the employees, to band together to get the corporation to treat them, ostensibly, better. Get better benefits, get better working conditions, get higher wages. And at the same token, you have professors doing exactly the same thing. They are banding together, and of course, tenure improves that a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But think about tenure, and think about unions. A union wants to have as many of the employees as possible part of the union.
Yes.
But professors do not want every teacher to have tenure.
That's true.
As a matter of fact, tenured professors are kind of a pretty elite group. And I think they try to make sure that they stay that way. And that's
okay.
Not the same as a union.
I don't know that I'm going to agree with that, and I suspect that this goes on all across the nation, but I don't know that for sure because I only really know California. California has California Teachers Association, and they have the NEA. Both of them are union kinds of things. California teachers, after 3 years, have tenure.
Automatically?
Yeah. If they haven't been disciplined, fired, whatever, in that 3-year period, they're in there.
Okay. I'm going by my experience at the University of Illinois.
Uh-huh.
You didn't get tenure unless you got voted in.
Yes, that's true. That's true at the college level, I believe.
Yeah,
and
teachers, once you got a permanent position, like at high school or
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, once you got a permanent position, you were in.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yep.
I'm thinking more along the lines of at the
college university level, yeah.
Where there's a slightly different, you know, thing where the organization is much more elitist oriented. And they're not necessarily interested in everybody getting in,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
why, you know, in most universities, you might be a, you know, extremely well-known and accomplished scholar, but if you're a conservative, odds are tenure is going to be something not so easily granted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain amount of that. That was one of the things that I saw where. Two organizations that have somewhat similar points of view working together, but, you know, they're not the same. And I would suggest to you that college professors would probably look down at Walmart workers and, let's say, disdain would be a
mm-hmm.
minor word for it. But we are probably in agreement that the Democratic Party does enforce a certain amount of conformity upon its participants. You're going to hold a specific political line under specific, you know, situations, and it's enforced pretty heavily.
Yes, yes.
Republicans apparently don't do that very well. Except, well, I don't know. I've been watching what's going on with the Republican Party right now, and have been paying attention to it for the last 6 months. Post the election, with the idea that we have the conservative wing that says, no, you're not being very conservative, no, you haven't paid much attention to us, and we have the moderate wing, which is saying, we have gotten way too conservative, you guys have way too much influence, we need to get more moderate.
Mm-hmm.
There does appear to be a certain amount of isolation of those two groups where the moderates are enforcing a certain amount of conformity in the moderate sphere,
mm-hmm.
and the social conservative sphere has always been pretty firm about its boundaries and what is acceptable to them.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if the two are unlike the union organizers and the college professors, unable to put aside the differences in order to work together. Is there so much emphasis on conformity that there's no way to break between the two?
You know, that really is an interesting question, and I think that the Republican Party is probably in the throes of trying to answer that question. I don't know if you're aware of, you probably are, the new push by the Republican Party that says they're going to send their folks out to listen to the grassroots and get some ideas about how to strengthen the GOP and make it a force to be contended with. They have a pretty diverse Republican group out there. John McCain is on there. There is no way that you can call John McCain a conservative. They also have Jim DeMint. They have Governor Palin. They have Jindal. They have a whole number of people that you would not say, oh, they are all in lockstep. And their point is, I think, that they are trying to show naturally conservative folks there is room in this tent for you. Now, whether that's going to work, and my opinion is that it will work if they listen, but if they are there only to say, you need to join us, I think a lot of people that are in the GOP now are saying, no, you need to be listening. We will talk to you. The Tea Parties are an excellent example of that. I don't know how many elected GOP officials were politely but firmly told, you are welcome to come and be out in the crowd and listen. But it is time for you to listen. You are not leading this movement. If they will take that to heart, then yeah, maybe.
Well, I think it's with regard to the Tea Parties, I think there was probably a lot less than most people would have expected wanting to show up at the Tea Parties.
Yeah.
The ones that, you know, I don't know, I want to suggest the ones that were honestly interested in what was going on at the Tea Parties showed up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a fair amount of people that, you know, said, well, you know, you're going to, the TVs are, and the radio people are going to want, you know, a high-profile politician so they can do their little thing. And, of course, any politician that assumed that was, as you suggested, politely told to shut up, sit down, and listen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, a classic case here in California, they had a big Tea Party in Sacramento, right there at the Capitol. Ron Nehring, who is the head of the California GOP in the state, was roundly booed when he was trying to deliver some remarks. Now, you have to understand that Ron Nehring, as the titular head of the California GOP, had just given $650,000 of GOP money to Arnold Schwarzenegger to try to sell propositions 1A through 1E.
That was kind of stupid.
Yes, it was. And he may have gotten that message. I don't know. Because the California GOP is now saying, no, we're going to oppose those ballot measures.
Okay. Here in Madison, Wisconsin, every year, for most of CJ's elementary school years, when budgeting came up for the school system, one of the first things the school board would say was, well, we have to get rid of the strings program in order to save money. Now, what the strings program is starting in fourth and fifth grade, kids, if they want, can participate in a strings orchestra where they're taught violin, viola, bass, cello.
Mm-hmm.
And the strings program is extremely popular.
Uh-huh.
In the spring, actually they do one in around the holidays, and then they do one, actually it's a little bit closer to March, and then late in the spring, all of the schools in one half of the district get to one of the high schools, and they play with the high school orchestra. And it works this way. They have learned 15 pieces of music. And they start with the easiest, which is, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Right.
And every kid that's been in the strings program from fourth, fifth grade all the way up through high school is there playing. It's a big auditorium, usually at the gym. And, you know, there's 300 kids or more playing their violin.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of the string instrument, which is rather interesting. And then they move to song two and song three, and as kids, as they exceed their abilities, and before that they're told where they have to stop, you know, when they get to song seven, the fourth graders are gone. When
mm-hmm.
they get to song nine, the fifth graders are gone.
Mm-hmm.
When they get to
mm-hmm.
11, the sixth graders are gone.
Right.
Until they get to, like, the 13th, and then there might be two or three of the best elementary kids playing the last couple, you know, one more song with the high school, and then the high school plays the last two by themselves.
Oh, how cool. Okay.
It's an excellent
program. Yeah.
And they try to make it as inexpensive as possible. It's like $70 for the year.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay for the rental for your... They have lots of instruments available for rent,
mm-hmm.
Which are, I think, like $7 or $8 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they try to make it pretty inexpensive. Now, we bought CJ her violin after the first year.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She's had her own violin since then. But the first thing the school board does is say, hey, we have to get rid of the strings program. It's too expensive.
Right.
Or you have to give us $12 million more dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, the strings program costs probably, you know, $500,000, so why do they need $12 million to do it?
Exactly.
And the very first year that I was involved with the school and CJ was in the strings program, and they said that, you know, I said it to every single parent that would listen. This is bullshit. There's no way they're going to get rid of the strings. They're only using the argument that they're going to get rid of the strings in order to get more money, and I don't buy it.
Exactly.
They're never going to get rid of the strings. It's the way they've learned how to force people to get more money.
Yep.
And,
of course,
was it in California? Somebody, I heard it today, said because of budget cutbacks, we're going to have to cut, you know, police and fire department.
Oh, that's a big thing in California right now. Governor Schwartz.
Which, of course, is bullshit. How about getting rid of, you know, I hate to say this, the senior centers? Or how about getting rid of, you know, the illegal immigration, you know, welcome centers?
Yeah,
You don't have to get rid of the police and fire department. There's certainly billions that can be cut before you can get down to basic services.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, of course, the first thing they're going to do is say, we have to get rid of the basic services, otherwise we need $8 billion more dollars.
That's exactly right. You betcha. If we don't get that money, we are going to have to cut essential services.
Right.
Excuse me? Let's take a look at all those inessential services first, folks.
Right. And, of course, they never want to get rid of those particular things.
Nope.
So, we have this situation where you in California, I'm telling you, lots of people are paying attention to those propositions, because and I hate to say it, although I lived out there, you know, so goes California, so goes the rest.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people are reaching the point where they're saying, yeah, you know, about that essential services.
Yeah, right.
You go ahead.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Yep.
We're not going to give you any more money. Go right ahead.
You cut whatever you think you need to cut.
And I can guarantee you that if you do cut essential services, you will be the next thing cut.
That's exactly right. People
and, of
are
course,
not
they're not
going to
cut essential services.
Well, they can't. I mean, the example here in California is Governor Schwarzenegger came out today and said, oh, if these don't pass, we're going to have to cut 170,000 firefighter jobs. And I'm thinking to myself, first off, I don't know that there's 170,000 firefighters in the state of California. Two, most of those folks are city employees. They are not state employees. So, Governor, you can say that, but the fact of the matter is, no, that's going to be a city decision. That isn't going to be your decision.
Well, you know what? Maybe it sounds like, and this is actually going to lead into something else.
Good.
It sounds like, you know, Pelosi, with her 6 million people lost their jobs, you know, last month,
oh, yeah.
And if this continues,
yep.
You know, pretty soon we'll be up to 2 million, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the idea that that what is happening today is going to happen forever.
Ah, yeah, the linear thinking. Mm-hmm. You betcha.
Right.
Yep.
One of the people that I follow on Twitter
sent
me a link to some YouTube videos about a professor giving a lecture on exponential growth.
Ah, okay.
And how people need to pay attention to when they say, you know, crime has been increasing by 7% a year, and we really need to take advantage, you know, we really need to address this. And he said, well, of course, nobody's paying attention to the fact that if it was actually growing at 7% a year, that in 10 years, you know, we would all be either criminals or all be victims.
That's exactly right.
You know, of course, you know, Nancy Pelosi's doing the same thing. You know, if we keep losing 600,000 jobs a year, you know, a month, you know, pretty soon we're all going to be unemployed. Well, yeah, duh, moron. No,
yeah, exactly.
Hello.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, this professor used this as an example. And I'm going to test your ability here.
Oh, I love tests.
Here's the test. He said, you have a test tube. And in the test tube is bacteria. And the bacteria double in number every minute. If you put the bacteria in the test tube at 11 o'clock, and at 12 o'clock the test tube is full, at what time would the test tube be only half full?
Probably about 12:30.
At 12 o'clock, it's full.
Right.
Okay. At what time would the test tube be only half full?
Well, it was half full at 11.
No. You started at 11.
Right.
And
it doubles
11,
every hour.
No. It doubles every minute.
Oh, it doubles every minute. I'm sorry.
So
I was working in hours here.
So that by 12 o'clock, it's full.
Okay.
Okay. So start at 11, doubles every minute, 12 o'clock, it is full. At what time would the tube be half full?
I'm still saying 12:30.
It's full at 12.
I know.
If it's half full, that means it would be sometime before 12 o'clock.
Ah,
about
11:30, No, because you got a doubling. So, what, 11:15? No, that isn't right. Let me see. Give the answer, because I'm not doing the math in my head here.
11:59.
Ah, sure.
1 minute before, it's half
right.
full. It
yep.
doubles. Now it's full.
Exactly. But then you have to carry that to, for at least what we have been talking about, you have to say, when does it become half full again?
Ah, no, you can't go there. Because what he did was he said, what happens if we triple the amount of storage space and we introduce three more test tubes into the equation? How long would it take to fill the three new test tubes? And the answer is 3 minutes. It's actually two, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. It would take 2 minutes to
right.
to fill what was, you know, a tremendous increase in the amount of capacity.
Exactly.
The point that he wanted to make was, by the time we realize that we've got a problem,
mm-hmm.
the test tube being a quarter full,
mm-hmm.
we are really, really close to being in a big problem.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, the problem with that is this. The bacteria cannot reproduce every minute just because we say that.
That's true.
The bacteria are going to use resources.
Yes, they are.
And those resources are going to be quickly depleted, and as quickly as they deplete, the bacteria will stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
And we will never get to 11:55 or 54 or 53 or 52 because probably 4 or 5 minutes into the bacteria doubling,
mm-hmm.
it will have already pretty much used up the resources available in that tub.
And then it cannibalizes.
There's only so much cannibalizing they can do.
Exactly, which was my point when I was saying, okay, so when does it become half full again?
It won't even get half full. I don't think it'll get 10% full.
Well, I agree.
The point he was making is, of course, a false argument.
Yes, it is.
His argument that people didn't understand the problem of exponential growth, he was, in fact, making exactly the same mistake. Yes, we understand exponential growth can be a big problem. However, exponential growth in any situation does not occur in a vacuum.
That's true.
If we used 100 million barrels of oil last year, we cannot use 200 million barrels this year.
That's accurate, yes.
We certainly won't be able to use 400 million barrels the year after that.
That's right.
We simply don't have the capacity to do so.
That's exactly right.
So there is no doubling. There is no even 7% growth. We're lucky if we see, regardless of what anybody's saying, you know, less than a percent growth. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not just the use, it's the production part of it. How do we use those resources?
Yes. Yeah.
All of this comes back to the idea of conformity. Ask, please ask, how did I get all the way back to conformity?
Oh, yeah.
Because people have a mindset. The Al Gore global warming morons, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There is the scientific work is done. We have a consensus. Well, we have a consensus. We have conformity. Everybody that, you know, knows what's really happening agrees with us that global warming is happening. And if you don't, then you're a denier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You must conform.
Yeah.
I'm not a big conformity person.
No, I never was either.
And I'm not a suggest that conservatives, and I mean the conservatives that are classically liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest to you, as a group, we're not really big on conformity.
That has been my experience.
Individual rights mean that individuals get to do whatever they damn well want.
Yeah.
And that means that there's going to be a whole lot of people doing things I don't like.
Yeah.
But I want them to have the right to do it.
Because you want to be able to do what you want to do also.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that means if I have the right to do anything, I have to. I must. I am required in my most basic way of thinking to allow you to have exactly the same rights.
That's true.
Even if both of us never agree on what is the right thing to do.
That's true.
And
I think that's what you see going on in the GOP right now. Is coming to grips with that whole concept of if there is individuality, then there are going to be individuals that do things that you do not particularly care for. But if you do not allow them to do those things which you don't particularly care for, then you will not be able to do the things that you care very much about. Now, whether the leadership is getting that message, I don't know. I think the jury's out on that one.
I think it's the place where we need to focus.
Yes.
It is the... I don't think it's a Tea Party issue, because I think
Mm-mm.
the Tea Party issue is very much oriented to the idea of how do we address government.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the appropriate way that government needs to behave. I think that's where the Tea Parties are going. I think that's perfectly great. I think it's perfectly fine. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, we need to be able to say we are not the party of outcomes.
Yes.
We are not the party that looks for a specific outcome. The Democrats are looking for specific outcomes. They're looking for equality of outcomes on the Democratic Party.
Yes, they are.
We should not, as the conservatives, Republicans, we should not be a party. We should not suggest that any party, the American Conservative Party or the GOP or any other party on the right, should be looking for equality in outcomes. We don't want equality of outcomes. The biggest argument I had when I was in college, when the first time I was in college, was there was a big... No, it wasn't the first time. It was the second time. In any case, the big thing was the Equal Rights Amendment.
Oh,
let me
yeah.
tell you, I opposed it left, right, and center, and let me tell you, I got lots of shit for it.
I'll bet you did.
And I said, are you nuts? I don't want equal rights. And they went, I said, no, I want the same rights as they have. Don't you get it?
Exactly.
Who wants equal rights? Screw that shit. I want the same rights.
Yeah.
I said, well, it's the same thing. No, 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 no.
Oh.
Not the same thing.
Nope.
It's not. Give me the same rights. I am not interested in equal rights. Justice is not about equality.
No.
Duh. Hello. Wake up, people.
Well,
okay.
And the big issue right now in terms of the current occupant of the White House is, oh, I want to appoint a Supreme Court justice. This is one of the folks who rules on what's constitutional and what isn't, and I want them to be empathetic. I want them to judge based on circumstance.
No!
I know.
Well, I don't know. Okay, kind of depends on what you mean by circumstance. Are you talking about the situation of the case?
No, I'm talking about, oh, you're a member of group ABC? You get a little preferential treatment. You're a member of XYZ group? I'm sorry. You've had it way too good for way too long.
Yeah.
We're going to equalize things here, folks.
Yeah. No, that's not kind of what... Look, I said this to Victoria today. When they're talking about, on the radio, they're talking a little bit, just a touch, about Obama's first Supreme Court nominee.
Yes.
And I said, I don't care, you know, she said as long as it's not Bill Ayers. And I said, I don't care if Barack Obama, you know, nominates Bill Ayers to be the Supreme Court justice. And she said, what? And I said, yeah, look, hey, Bush nominated Harriet Myers. You got
exactly.
Him one.
Yeah.
You know, he can go ahead and nominate some absolutely off the frickin' wall nominee as long as he goes, just joking, get out of there. Now, here's my real person. Okay? Now, that's kind of how I give him the first one. I give him the first nomination. When he thinks I can nominate anybody and they're going to be Supreme Court Justice. And he's going to nominate, you know, someone that everybody's just going to go, huh? Are you crazy? The right is going to just go, huh? The left is just going to go nuts. No! You can't do that! Are you crazy? The left will go nuts. The left will take care of the first nominee. That's my opinion. That's what I think will happen. He will go crazy. He's going to name somebody that the entire planet's going to go, you're fucking nuts.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's the case.
That's kind of where I think things are going.
Good.
But I believe that if the GOP wanders around and actually listens, that'll be a good thing for the GOP.
Yes, it will.
I don't believe it for a second.
That they'll listen? No.
That they'll listen. I don't believe it for a second. I think they're going to go out there and say, see, we're here, shut up, this is what we're going to tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I mean, they have nobody outside of the Beltway establishment on there other than Jindal and Palin.
And Jindal's out as far as I'm concerned.
I don't know. I'm just saying, they aren't part of that.
Wait a second. No. Wait a second. Let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
Let's talk about Bobby Jindal.
Okay.
Because I have a particular problem with Bobby Jindal.
Uh-huh. And that would be
a very specific problem with Bobby Jindal.
And that would be
intelligent design.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out how come, but okay.
Because he wants intelligent design taught in Louisiana schools and signed a law into being that actually does that.
Okay.
I have a huge problem with intelligent design.
I see. Because you're a subscriber to the theory of evolution, which incidentally is not proved nor provable.
Absolutely. Positively. Guaranteed. I support the theory, the scientific theory of evolution. Because everything that we have theorized with regard to the theory of evolution has been, in fact, proven.
No.
I didn't say that.
We will disagree.
Theory of evolution
has been
proven.
And I'm not a proponent of either one of those, okay, just so everybody knows.
I'm not suggesting the theory of evolution has been proven, but the theory predicts certain things, and those predictions have been found to be true. Really? That is the hallmark
of Asia. where are those transitional species that are supposed to be occurring?
No, you don't have to even go there.
Sure.
No, you don't. If the theory of evolution is true, then you should be able to find A, and we can find A. Okay? If there are pieces missing in the theory, that doesn't invalidate the theory. The theory is invalidated.
Doesn't make it accurate either.
The theory is invalidated when you find that its ability to predict is false.
Okay.
When the theory says,
I mean, as a statement of science, yes, that's true. I'm trying to think of what proof you're trying to refer to, because I'm not aware. I mean, I'm not sure what you're saying. Okay, the theory of evolution said you're going to find A, and you're saying we found A, and I'm saying, so what was A?
Pick an idea. There's probably, you know, 1,000 different examples. And we can have a whole show on this. I'm ready to do that.
Cool.
Not tonight, because I think we've got 10 minutes left, and we're not going to get anywhere near it.
No, we aren't. Okay.
However,
so we can
fine.
Move on.
But understand, my problem is I have an extremely difficult issue with intelligent design. I think if people want to believe intelligent design, fine, great, no problem. You want to teach it? Big problem. And Bobby Jindal's all for teaching it. I got a big problem with that. And as far as I'm concerned, I have that gives me exactly the same pause as Rudy Giuliani moving his mistress into the governor's mansion, the mayor's mansion. Okay? In the big scheme of things, minor issue. However, it just tells me that there's a particular mindset that's there I don't agree with.
Okay.
Giuliani moved his mistress into the mayor's mansion while he was still married. I'm looking at that going, you know, if you'll screw your wife, you're going to screw us. Sorry. Done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If Bobby Jindal is going to support intelligent design, that's fine. But if he's going to support it in the schools to be taught, I got a big problem with that. Done. Gone.
Did he outlaw the teaching of the theory of evolution?
No.
Then what in the world is your problem?
Intelligent design is not on the same level as the theory of evolution. Pure and simple.
You're right. We're going to have to do a show on this.
Plan this. We'll do it in advance.
Yeah.
We'll plan on it.
Yeah.
And we'll do that soon, really soon.
Okay.
I think it's
important. Yeah, yeah.
Because
stay tuned, folks. It's coming.
I think it's important because as long as people continue to consider Bobby Jindal, they won't consider other people. And right now, I want them to consider other people.
Oh well, I you know, as far as 2012 is concerned. As far as I'm concerned, the field's wide open. You know, some conservative needs to step up, and we will see who that will be.
Yeah, I don't think we.
I'm not married to any particular candidate yet.
I'm against Newt. Somebody suggested him recently, and I said, you know, he's a really good guy. I like him a whole lot, but as president, yeah. No, thank you.
He's a theoretician.
He's a policy wonk.
The guy has, you know, a million ideas a minute. Truly a remarkable guy. He is not a presidential guy. Because the presidency is not an idea desk. That's
right.
That's a setting agenda and implementation desk. And that is not one of Newt's strongest points.
Right. You know, there's lots of good things about Newt, but as president, no, not interested. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, so right, yeah, at this particular point, you know, let's name off some of them. You know, Mitt, Giuliani, Chris, Jindal, Palin,
Huckabee.
Huckabee is a non-issue. He's a panderer. I'm not interested.
Yeah. I've never liked populists much.
Yeah. Romney, you know, I like him as a general, but please don't put him in charge. Giuliani, I already said.
He would make a great Secretary of the Treasury.
Giuliani?
No. Mitt.
Romney. Yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put him on the, you know, economic advisors.
Yep.
Treasury,
yep.
That's fine.
Yep.
Yep, no problem with that.
Yep.
Chris, you know, he's, I think anything beyond where he is right now is the Peter Principle for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably about at the absolute maximum he can handle reasonably
yep.
well.
And he's not a conservative, so, I mean, that kind of just throws him out for me.
Palin and Jindal, both not seasoned yet.
No,
they obviously I have my problems with Jindal. I don't have any particular problems with Palin at this point. She needs to get her national legs.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, she doesn't have... I absolutely believe she has the chops to handle the national stage. It's clear she does. You know, I think she just needs a little bit more street cred. She's got it with the vast majority of conservatives. I think it needs to be with the... I think other people need to see what the conservatives see. And they haven't had that opportunity yet. I think we can get it over the next couple of years, whether she'll be at the top of the ticket or the second place on the ticket.
Who knows?
She belongs on the ticket, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But... This is 2009.
Exactly.
We got another 2 years to play games with this before things start happening. And we're way too far from that.
Yeah, way too far. You know, where we need to concentrate is the 2010 elections.
Correct.
That's where it's got to happen.
It's got to happen on the local level.
Yep.
Got
to
happen in the local place.
You know, and I keep hearing a whole lot of talk about third parties. And I hear more and more people from a variety of backgrounds talking about that. And the pundits tell you, oh, no, can't do that. The two major parties have got things locked up. It's way too hard to get qualified in states, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? You only have to control a few seats to be able to make a difference.
Right.
When the polarization is such as it is, you only have to control a few seats. So, in my opinion, that argument kind of falls on deaf ears for me. I'm not buying that. Is it hard? Sure. Who said it was going to be easy?
And one of the things that you're right. One of the things that I see as the movement we've had, 10 states restate the 10th Amendment.
The 10th Amendment. Yeah.
And we're going to see more of that. Who put out? I don't know if you've seen it. This new a call for a constitutional convention for. 10 Amendments of Federalism.
I don't remember the group, but yes, I've heard of that.
So there's this position that the idea that, you know, the states are going to have much more emphasis in their own control of their own states. And, of course, Montana with their telling the government to go to hell as far as gun laws are concerned.
Oh, and guess what? Texas did that today also.
Cool beans. I think it's great.
I sent an email to the Texas folks, and I said, you know what? Y'all ought to think about cross-permitting Montana weapons.
Yeah, the problem is you got to get them from Montana to Texas. That means you got to get Wyoming and Colorado in on it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm willing to work on that. I think you could. Right, I think you actually could.
Yeah.
You know, Wyoming and Colorado, two more hunting areas. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think it's possible.
New Mexico, sure. You betcha.
So, the idea of ignore the national parties and focus in on the states, we're going to have, the movement is quite strong at this point, and
yeah.
It's gaining momentum and speed
yep.
to reassert state rights.
Absolutely.
Which, as Federalists, we just think it's just hunky-dory.
You know, I am surprised that doesn't get out there more in the chatter. I mean, I hear very few people talking about federalism, and that's a very neglected subject. We could do a whole show on that one, too.
Let me see. Federalism.
Yep.
Federalism. Evolution.
Yep.
Evolution v. ID.
Yep.
Okay. I don't think we have any disagreements on the idea of immigration, but that's coming back up in the summer.
Yes, it will. And folks, you need to be paying attention to it. You know, be contacting your representatives, letting them know that that's a vital issue for you.
Got a couple minutes, only a couple minutes left.
Okay, cool.
I did say something that it has been tweeted. TK, thank you for bringing it up. I'm not going to apologize for it. TK did reiterate to people, the FCC does not regulate Blog Talk Radio.
That's
so
true.
The seven deadly words I can say
in sequence and
repetitively.
Yes, you can.
That doesn't mean that I'm going to.
No.
But occasionally I get a little bit...
carried away.
Carried away.
Yeah, yeah.
I get a little passionate. Just a little passionate.
That's right. Hey, you know what? That's what folks need is some passion.
Passion.
You need... if you believe in your country... If you believe in the Republic of the United States of America, if you believe that your elected representatives need to, one, represent you, and two, they are your employees, not your employer, then you need to get passionate.
Right, gotta have passion. If you don't have passion, it's a waste of time. TK reminds me that it is Randy Barnett came up with the federalism amendment.
Okay.
And Randy can be found, I think he's on the Volk Conspiracy blog.
Okay.
I believe that's where I was reading it off of, was the Volk Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's Volkh Conspiracy, folks. Those of you who have an interest in that subject.
All right, 45 seconds.
Okay.
So,
Tracy, it has been a great show. I have enjoyed myself. And I'm gonna say hi to all my buds at Conservative Talk. Thanks for listening.
And for everyone else that are nonconformists, I want you to remember that you must listen to us every week.
That's right. And that includes you, Arkansas Traveler.
Bill, have a good weekend. I'm going to go out and play some golf tomorrow. We'll talk about it next week.
Cool. I'm looking forward to your report of the course.
We're done.
Hey, we be done.
That
was a good show. I like that one. Of course, I like them all, but oh well.
Yeah.
We didn't have any callers in, huh?
No callers.
Hmm.
No caller did want to come in.
Hmm.
Let me see if I can see what we did for May. Well, we know we had at least one listener. Oh, yeah. Well,
that's good.
Dom
well,
Bellamy died.
I know at least one person did. It was Lauren Jane 001. She's saying, love the show.
Eight Live is all it shows at this particular point. That'll update a little bit in the next half hour or so.
Okay.
Dom DeLuise died.
I heard that. Man.
I really liked him on the... Stargate. He played in a couple of episodes on Stargate.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was great. It was absolutely great.
He was a professional. He truly was. That's about the best thing I can say. He was a professional. He could do it. And it ain't bragging when you can do it. So, cool.
All
okay,
right.
Kiddo, I'm going to go see if there's any leftovers here.
We'll have some leftovers. I've got, the dogs have been whining at me for the last 20
uh-oh.
Minutes. So.
Uh-oh, you better get them out. We'll talk to you later, Trace.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.